Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy Baseball Live. We are on our midweek show here on Wednesday evening. I'm calling you from beautiful Clearwater and about ready to head into a game. I already saw two games. What am I talking about? And it was great. So I'm here back in the hotel doing a quick podcast before I go off to dinner. So anyway, always fun to be at minor league games. So I hope everybody is doing well. If you're looking for a Sunday show, just back up one and you can catch the great Timmy McLeod, who is joined me. We had a little technical difficulties in the beginning. He was playing around in the chat room and we finally figured it out. I hope everybody is having a terrific week this week. We're doing these midweek podcasts because not a lot has happened. I guess Chris Bryant has hit a couple more home runs. Nice to see him getting a lot more aggressive at the plate. He said that in an interview after the game last night that he's not sitting there just watching balls pass. And it's like, really? So he walked like, I don't know, 300 times in the first 400 at-bats he had or whatever. But it's good to see him being more aggressive. And the last night's bomb was just a moonshot. So tremendous raw power he's showing. Noah Syndergaard, obviously the big call-up. I think had a mixed results in that same game, pumped up to 98 miles an hour. He's not going to throw that hard in general, but he definitely touched 98 several times. I haven't been to a game in Wrigley Field in years. I used to live in the Chicago area and went to games quite frequently there. But since I moved in 1999, I haven't been back to Wrigley Field for a game. So I don't know how good those the gun is there. It's interesting. A lot of the teams now, I guess maybe they've amortized the entire cost of the Jugs guns that were there 20 years ago. And boy, I tell you, the guns have gotten a lot better today. And my gun is extremely accurate. And now I'm starting to see a lot of the ballparks, even in the minor league ballparks, they're getting the more advanced guns, and you're starting to see some pretty good velocity readings or accurate velocity readings. I'm assuming Wrigley Field are fairly accurate, so what I was seeing on the baseball game last night at 98 was probably a true 98. I didn't check Brooks Baseball to validate that or not. But he looked good. I mean, the curveball was definitely working. I thought his secondary pitches, he walked too many people, and I thought, you know, you have to kind of assume that he's going to have a bit of a rugged first outing. I think, again, it was okay. Gave up two bombs in the first inning to Rizzo and to Bryant, settled down. But again, he walked a few too many batters, and I think you'll see that settle down. I mean, the big leagues, as I tweeted out last night, is not AAA. As difficult as it is to pitch in the PCL, it's way more difficult to pitch in the major leagues. And it sounds silly, but the jump from double A or triple A, particularly for a pitcher to come to the major leagues, is huge. The batters are in general a lot more patient. They can tell balls and strikes. The good news, the umps are usually better at calling balls and strikes. It's interesting, particularly the lower levels of the minor leagues. Boy, getting an umpire who can call a good curveball is really rare to find. I've seen some really young guys. I remember Julio Urias last year was just literally throwing beautiful curveballs, and they were all being called balls, and they were all strikes. And it's just the umpire didn't see it, and he was getting frustrated, still pitched around it, pitched remarkable. So as you get to the upper levels of the minors, that usually improves, and then you get to the majors, and you usually get better calls from home plate umpires. But that didn't help Noah Syndergaard too much last night. But overall, the velocity was good. The secondary pitches were good. Gave up a couple of mistakes in the first inning. That's going to happen. Settled down, pitched okay. I definitely think he's going to be up for the duration. Again, he could wet the bed and get demoted after the next two games, but I really feel like that is going to yeah, that is going to regulate. He's going to be just fine. So hopefully you've picked them up. I spent, have a $100 fab budget. I spent $27 in one of my leagues to get him, the only 12-team league that he was available. So I kind of went in all in on him. Don't think there were too many injuries over the last couple of days. I know that Bryce Harper still hit another home run last night. It's just remarkable. And I tell you, you see that torque on his swing and how the bat speed and just the beautiful follow through. It is definitely a beautiful swing that I'm telling you, he's got 40 home runs, if not more, in that swing eventually. Whether it comes this year or not, I'm not exactly sure. But given the way he is playing, it could definitely be there. As I talked about last week, where we did Tommy John surgery survivors, and again, as we talked about on Sunday, just what happened to Jarrett Parker was just awful. I haven't heard any kind of definitive follow-up, but I think a third Tommy John surgery might be in the offering. Unfortunately, I hate to say this, if you're in a dynasty league, it's free to cut Jarrett Parker. I mean, I can't imagine this ending well for him, and it's just a real shame. Hopefully he'll recover and be able to have a successful life doing either back in baseball in some capacity, hopefully back pitching one day. If not, I'm sure he'll be successful whatever he does. But there's other guys that are moving along, and hopefully we'll have some other Tommy John surgery guys to talk about in the future coming weeks. But I thought that was a really interesting discussion. People appreciated that. And then we talked about those rookie players that might be coming up. And, I think Carlos Carrasco mentioned it on Sunday, promoted to AAA. Haven't seen what he's done yet so far, but guys, you know, as I told you, I think it was about 4 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when I heard Jeff Luhnow conversation. He said it twice about the possibility of Carlos Correa coming up. And the nice thing about these new general managers, I mean, they tell you what they think. They're not the, you know, double-talking John Hart type of player who will tell you one thing and smile and then do something totally different. Jeff Luhnow is going to tell you what he's going to do. And a lot of the other newer general managers are going to tell you what they're going to do, because in the end, it's still the same negotiation techniques that you're going to be doing. But Carlos Correa is going to be up. I think that the tell is out there, assuming he's going to be successful in AAA, and there could be some adjustment period, I'm assuming. But I think there's a very, very good chance he comes up. And I think it's the middle of June after the Super 2 status passes, and they're assured that at least he will not enter arbitration a year earlier. But I guess time will tell. But this week we are going to talk about, if I can bring up my spreadsheet, kind of undervalued pitchers. And what I've done this a lot over the last few years, where I basically take all the pitchers that are out there, and I do it two or three times during the year, looking for those pitchers who have started off very poorly. I basically take a look at their ERA, their current ERA, and I also take a look at their fielding independent ERA, subtract that out, come up with something sort on that, and then I also take a look at pitchers who have seven or more strikeouts per game, three or less walks per game, and I think pitched some number of innings, maybe 30 innings or something like that. And I basically then come up with a list, and I start to analyze that list and take a look at their pitch FX data, see what's happening there, and tell you the guys that I think might be getting unlucky, might be looking for a bit of a breakout, and therefore either go pick them up off the waiver wire, go try to buy low on these guys. Some are household names, some are not. First guy is, and I've talked about him a lot, I've so far been wrong on this guy, but everything statistically looks like that Clay Buchholz should be much better than he is. He had a really good outing a few days ago. And here's the deal. He is pitching to a 5.73 ERA. His expected ERA, his FIP, fielding independent ERA, is 3.09. His XFIP is 3.24, so it's pretty much in alignment with that. And XFIPS kind of takes out ballpark factors and all that kind of stuff. So it's trying to eliminate like the home run factor out of that. And he's got a BABIT of 393. So there's no, it's obvious why his ERA is so inflated. So you look statistically at that in a 309 fielding independent ERA, and it looks like, I mean, it could be a remarkable rest of the season for Clay Buchholz. So I went and took a look at kind of some of the PitchFX data. And it's interesting. His fastball velocity is one of the first things you look at. Has a pitcher's fastball velocity taken a huge dip down? And usually if you see something with 2 or 3 miles difference, you start to get a little worried. We talked about that with Mark Melanson. I haven't seen what he's done recently. A lot of times early in the season, arm strength is not built up yet. We saw that with Dylan Patantis. I saw him hit 99 miles an hour a couple of nights ago on the radar gun. So clearly with him, young arm, it was just a matter of him building that arm strength back up. But Clay Buchholz, believe it or not, has had an increase in fastball velocity, which hold that thought for a moment. His secondary pitches are getting really good swings and misses, but his particularly his obviously his change slash splitter is one of the best in the leagues, and his slider is also getting a lot of swings and misses. So what's the deal? Well, from what I can tell, looking at everything, his problem is his fastball. Even though it's increased in velocity, he's getting a 312 batting average against his four-seamer and a 305 batting average against his sinker. So generally what happens when you see something like that, you see an increased velocity for a guy who is basically a ground ball pitcher, likes to keep the ball down. He actually might be throwing the ball too hard and he's not getting a whole lot of movement. So that fastball, and you take a look at Brooks Baseball and it shows you kind of trajectory, that fastball is pretty flat. So my guess is, just the opposite, as Clay Buchholz starts to tire a little bit as the season goes on, that velocity will tick down a little bit. And believe it or not, he might actually get a little bit more movement on that fastball. And maybe some of those statistics will finally start to surface. So if you kind of start to kind of combine all those things together, and I know it could be, well, it's Rich just being a self-fulfilling prophecy. I do think there's a lot of upside in Clay Buchholz. Matt Shoemaker's had a pretty bad year so far. Breakout candidate, really came out of nowhere last year for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And this year, not so good. A 661 ERA, a 640 FIP, and an XFIP of 407, which is pretty interesting. So so there looks like there's room for growth there. His BABIT is 298. He is striking out a number of, let's see, let me cursor over here. Apologize, everybody. Let's see, where's my home run? His problem, obviously, is his 2.9 home run per nine. So that's where the real problem is. I can't find his strikeout per nine. That's going to be a real bummer. Oh, there it is. Strikeout per nine is 8.9. Walk per nine is 2. But again, it is that home run per nine at 2.9, which is causing all the problems. But here is the bugaboo with that 26% ground ball rate, 49% fly ball rate. He's in a big park, but he's not pitching in a big park. He becomes very exposed. So his BABIT is pretty much league average. I don't, if I'm an owner of Matt Shoemaker, it's probably not a guy that that I'm going to go off and expect a big recovery from. I think Matt Shoemaker is probably a league average pitcher at best. I would not be trying to pick him up off the waiver wire. We'd not be trying to buy low on them. I do believe that Matt Shoemaker has become the guy that we thought he was in the minor leagues, 28 years old. Last year could have been his big year. Carlos Carrasco is the next guy. 371 BABIT, a 471 ERA, an expected ERA, fielding independent of 301, an XFIP of 262. Guys, this looks like a kid who is just getting completely unlucky. 11 strikeouts per nine. 2.5 walks per nine. That's a strikeout to walk ratio of 4.9. Home runs, 0.9 per nine. You got to be all over Carlos Carrasco. I would be tonight, as soon as you hear this podcast, I'd be going to the owner of Carlos Carrasco and saying, hey, that last year, he's going back to being Carlos Carrasco. He's not very good. This guy, I would be all over. Kyle Hendricks is the next guy. before his outing last few days ago, he was a much better buy. His BABIP is 305, so it's pretty much league average. His ERA was 4.561. It's actually come down from that last when I cut this list on Monday or Sunday, whenever I cut it. After his last outing, he pitched very well. It was 5.561 with a FIP of 4.22 and an xFIP of 4.21, and now it's a little bit reduced. I think Kyle Hendricks, I think there's some value there. The strikeouts are there with 7 per 9, and the walks are there at 2.1. He's got a 3.3 strikeout per 9. Home runs, about league average. I think he's slightly better than league average. So if you're maybe in an NL only, be a guy that I'd be going after. But there's some value in Kyle Hendricks. The next guy is Corey Kluber, Cleveland Indians. A lot of people have asked me, what's up with Corey Kluber? He looks like Carlos Carrasco to me, a 5.04 ERA, a 3.19 FIP, a 3.15 xFIP. You love it when the xFIP and the FIP are right next to each other. A 3.64 batting average of balls in play. The strikeouts are there with 9.3 per 9. Walks are there at 2.2. That's a 4.2 strikeout to walk ratio, less than one home run per 9. Corey Kluber, gentlemen and ladies, is getting very unlucky. You have got to go and invest in Corey Kluber. Do not sell low on him. Try to buy low on him instead. It's a guy that, again, he's got the pedigree, so you're not going to be able to buy too low on him. But really talk up that really high ERA and the fluky year and the fact that he's 29 years old. He was an older guy, sat in the minor leagues for a long time. I think there's definitely some growth opportunity there. The next guy is CeCe Sabathia. I don't know what's here, but it's probably a little bit better than a 5.20 ERA. His BABIP's increased a little bit at 3.38. His FIP is 4.52. That's probably means he hasn't pitched a whole lot at Yankee Stadium. His xFIP is 3.74. It's not a great profile. The strikeouts are not there. His velocity, as everybody knows, has come down a lot. His K rate is just 7 per 9. His walk rate, though, is 1.9 per 9, and his command is 3.6. His home run rate's a little bit inflated. That's because he doesn't have the stuff. I potentially would be streaming CeCe Sabathia because you can find him on a lot of waiver wires when he's going up against weaker hitting teams. I think he's a guy that's a streaming option at this juncture, but a guy that, you can't just completely dismiss. And pretty much in every 12-team league, he's on the waiver wire. Again, a guy that I would probably be throwing out there against the Tampa Bay Ray, potentially against the Houston Astros. Yeah, I know that they've got home run hitters, but they're going to strike out 14 times, and CeCe Sabathia is going to get his fair share of those strikeouts. The next guy is a Tim McCloud hero here, and that's Jose Quintana. ERA currently sitting at 5.03, a FIP at 3.65. His BABIP is 3.53, so you can see he's getting very, very unlucky. And again, BABIP is one of those things that is a double-edged sword. I talked about batting average of balls in play a lot. Generally, league average is somewhere between 2.90 and 3.10, depending on the year. I don't know exactly where the average is at this juncture. BABIP can show one of two things. Usually if you see crazy high BABIPs of three, like with Clay Buchholz at, what was it, 393, or we're going to talk about some pitchers that are maybe a little overvalued at the end where they have incredibly low batting average of balls in play, usually you're going to see some kind of regression around that either way. So those are usually pitchers that are getting a little unlucky, or batters that are getting a little unlucky. With Quintana sitting at 353, there's probably some correction that's there just because there's been more balls falling in than there should be. However, you also need to take a look at just like our meatballs coming over the ball. So you need to start taking a scouting those players, taking a look at Brooks Baseball Pitch FX data to find out exactly what's happening with Quintana's stuff. From everything I've looked at, this is a guy whose fastball's still premium. He's still got really good secondary pitches. He's just getting unlucky. I think there is definitely a positive correction coming down the road. So I would be all over Jose Quintana, Mr. McLeod, I believe, is right there. 7.7 strikeout per nine, 2.4 walk per nine. That's a strikeout to walk ratio of 3.2. Home runs are definitely in line. Again, he doesn't play in a great ballpark with the White Sox, but let's take a look at what his ground ball percentage is. It's 42%, so he's not a ground ball machine, but I mean it's not awful either. So he's pretty much a fairly traditional pitcher from his mixture of fly balls to ground balls. Hopefully, you're finding this interesting. I know a lot of these names you've heard of, and some maybe that a little surprising with CeCe Sabathia and Kyle Hendricks. Here's another guy that a little weird. It's a very weird stat line. I'm not even sure what to make of it. It's Jimmy Nelson. Jimmy Nelson, 26 years old, I thought would take a big step up this year. I mean, he pitched really well his last outing. I've seen some 10 strikeouts outings, and I've seen some terrible outings. Currently sitting at a 4 ERA with a FIP of 383 and an XFIP of 366. So that looks like there's some opportunity there. But I take a look at his batting average of balls and planes at 261. So that would suggest that you could see some reverse regression going on. So you could actually see maybe that ERA getting worse. The ground balls, you like at 49%. Home runs are sitting perfectly at one per nine. And generally, that's in general league average is a home run per nine innings. His strikeout rate is 8.8. His walk rate is 3. Got a great strikeout to walk ratio. But he's also getting very lucky in terms of a very low batting average of balls in play. So I think Jimmy Nelson's probably a hold for me. I don't know if I'd be selling him or trying to buy him. I think he's kind of sitting in the middle with opportunities on both sides. Next guy is Jesse Hahn, and for some reason I didn't write down his BABIP. 4.73 ERA and FIP at 3.23. Now, Hahn is very interesting. The strikeout rate is not there at 5.6, but he is not walking anybody at 1.9 with a 2.9 strikeout to walk ratio. He's also not walking, not giving up any home runs, and the ground ball rate is sitting at 50%. So, I mean, he plays for Oakland, so the ground ball rate doesn't help him too much because Oakland's a huge ballpark, and at night the ball just doesn't travel very far. Oakland doesn't have the greatest infield anymore now that Jed Lurie is out. And so, I mean, it's not a great defensive side. But I think there's probably some opportunity there with Jesse Hahn. I think he's going to pitch better than that 4.73 ERA. Is he going to be league average a little bit better? Yeah, I think slightly better. So I'm not buying the 3.24 fielding independent ERA, but I am probably buying a 3.75 ERA, which means that, you know, he could pitch a little bit better the rest of the season, 3.50 to 3.60 kind of ERA. Not going to be a ton of strikeouts, but he's also probably not going to blow up too often. So an interesting streaming pitcher, again, against some poor hitting teams, particularly, well, I guess it doesn't really matter if he's home or away, but obviously you want to pitch him when he is home. The last guy kind of surprised me because I've never been a big fan of Ruby De La Rosa. But 4.30 ERA, fielding XFIP of 3.48, so there's definitely looks like there's some opportunity there. His BABIP is kind of 2.81, so it's pretty much sitting at league average. But what I really like is the fact that he's striking out over a batter an inning. He's walking 2.5 batters per inning with a 3.8 strikeout to walk ratio. He's always been able to get ground balls at 43%, but he's given up a few too many home runs. So I think if you can cut down those home runs, get him back to league average, I think you could see some opportunities. Now, you argue, oh, well, Richie's playing in the dry weather conditions of Chase Park or Chase, I guess it's Chase Park out in Arizona and Phoenix. But given his ground ball tendency, I think there's some opportunities for the owners of Ruby De La Rosa to get some squeeze some more value out of that. So kind of like him the rest of the way. Again, not to be transformational to your team, but to be a little bit better than he has been so far. Let's get down to a couple of guys that have been pitching way over their head and are due for some corrections. So let me cursor down here. Boom, boom, boom. I'm going to talk about six or seven guys. The first is Dan Heron. Dan Heron, looked a lot better when I did this before his last outing, which he got beat up a little bit. ERA of 3.70, expected ERA or fielding independent at 4.97. Dan Heron is just not striking out anybody anymore. Again, 5.8. I know we just talked about Jesse Hahn. Very similar profile of 5.8 and a walk rate of 1.9. But opposite of Jesse Hahn, he has only got a 35% ground ball rate. Dan Heron has always been a fly ball pitcher. He lost his velocity, and now it's just razor thin. He's going to be a guy that can pitch very effectively for a couple outings and then will absolutely get crushed. And I think that's what we're going to see with him the rest of the way. So if you pick him on the right night, it's going to be very good. If you pick him on the wrong night, you're going to get absolutely destroyed. I wouldn't own Dan Heron. I wouldn't be trying to give him to you in a trade. It's a warning. Run away from this Will Robinson. David Phelps is another guy. Oh, by the way, Dan Heron with a 2.40 batting average of balls in play. David Phelps currently with an ERA of 2.90. XFIP is 4.57. Getting a little bit of a bump by pitching out of Marlins Park, but. Again, a guy that has always been somewhat of a carbon copy of Dan Heron. Throws a little bit harder, but a guy that is not a ground ball pitcher at 38% ground ball rate. Really doesn't walk anybody. Also doesn't strike out anybody at 5.5. He is a sabermetric darling just because he doesn't walk anybody, but his fastball is very average. His secondary pitchers are very average. He gets a tendency to get hit hard. Would I pitch him, stream him in Marlins Park? Perhaps. Would I pitch him away from Marlins Park? Absolutely not. Aaron Harang, 2.38 ERA, a XFIP of 4.36. 4.36 XFIP. So this is another one of those things that you got to be very, very careful with Aaron Harang. He's got a 255 batting average of balls in play. Strikeout rate is no longer what it used to be. A lot of people are new to fantasy baseball. Believe it or not, Aaron Harang was a 10 strikeout per nine guy back in, it's probably been 10 years ago, maybe even further when he was with the Reds, and could throw 94, 95 miles an hour. Those days have passed and long passed. And very few pitchers are able to reinvent themselves. And I'm going to say it, I know it's heresy on this baseball show, not very many people have been able to turn themselves into Bartolo Colon. He pretty much throws a fastball. And it's a guy who also used to throw 95, 96 miles an hour, sitting at 91 miles an hour, changes speeds on that fastball, is a mastercraft and doesn't walk anybody. And he is a flat-out pitcher. And it's remarkable to watch a Fat Bart game. I know I gave the Mets a bad time for starting him in opening day. I guess I got egg on my face because Bartolo Colon has been very, very good. And, man, the dude can flat-out pitch. And you have to survive with that. Aaron Harang has become a better pitcher over the years. But he is razor-thin there. So I would run Aaron Harang out there until he falls over. I wouldn't be trading for him. I wouldn't be being suckered into getting him back in a trade. Anthony DeSclafani with the Cincinnati Reds. This is definitely a warning here. A 2.79 ERA with a 4.55 XFIP. So we're talking, that's almost two runs more a game. He's got a batting average of balls in play of 2.38. It's all bad from a statistical standpoint. He's got a walk strikeout per nine at 6.8, a walk per nine at 3.8, he's got a 1.8, a less than 2.0 strikeout to walk ratio. Baseball HQ has always used that 2.0 is to be rosterable. I think that somewhat still holds true. I don't agree with a lot of the Baseball HQ stuff, but I do think that guidepost is pretty good with the 2.0 strikeout to walk ratio. Somebody has something over that, you consider them. I like to use 3.0 as my safety net to get somebody with a strikeout to walk ratio of over 3. That's the guy I want to roster. So there's nothing that looks good in the statistical profile of Anthony DeSclafani. Plus, he plays in a small park. I'd be running away from him. The next guy is Michael Wacha. Michael Wacha is only 24 years old. Michael Wacha holds a 209 ERA. Michael Wacha is also not striking out anybody. I don't know if you've seen that, which is all leading to an xFIP of 414, guys. His not walking anybody, 1.9. You know what a strikeout per nine rate is? 4.4. What the heck happened to Michael Wacha's strikeout rate? I haven't delved into enough to figure that out. He's still getting a lot of ground balls at 55%. He plays for a great ballpark. Excuse me, plays for a great team, going to get a lot of run support. But man, a 233 batting average of balls in play, you're going to see a pretty big correction here. And it is really concerning that Michael Wacha has stopped striking out, guys. And until he does that, it's not a guy that I would be trading for. Somebody offered me Michael Wacha straight up for Steven Souza in a dynasty league. And I'd have made that trade in a heartbeat if Michael Wacha would have been Michael Wacha of old. But man, until the guy can correct his strikeout rate, you just can't make those kinds of trades. So I decided not to do that deal. It could be wrong, but I decided not to do it. Kyle Gibson, here's another guy with a 270 ERA, a 452 FIP, and a 488 xFIP, batting average of 252. Again, a guy whose, strikeout rate, this is not a misprint, strikeout rate 2.7, a walk rate 3.7. Come on. This is not going to end well for young Kyle Gibson. I've heard him a number of interviews. He seems like a great guy, really fun interview. This is going to end poorly. Take him out of your starting lineup. Do not throw Kyle Gibson out anymore. This is going to blow up on you. Hector Santiago with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. ERA of 257, a FIP of 459, xFIP of 489. Use whichever you want. It ain't going to end well for him either. A batting average of balls in play of 237. Let's see. He is striking out 8 per 9, which is good. Walking 4.6 per 9. A lot of guys getting on. Base of 1.7 strikeout to walk ratio. Ground ball rate of 34%. He's getting saved a little bit by playing in Angels ballpark, which is a really big ballpark, but there is a lot of warning there. And the last guy, the most overrated pitcher so far, is Nick Martinez with the Texas Rangers. He's got an ERA of 188 and an xFIP of 478. He's got a bad average of balls, I believe, which isn't too far off average of 271. But, strikeout rate is 3.7 per nine. His walk rate of 2.2 per nine. That's just not going to get it done. You're not going to survive in the major leagues with a strikeout rate of 3.17. So he does get the ground balls, which you like, but he is a guy that somebody tried to trade me Nick Martinez for Kenny Vargas in another dynasty league. And I'm like, really? It's funny, you get these trade offers. You know, I do a radio show and I think I know what I'm talking about from a baseball perspective. And you get these kind of crazy sell high things, guys trying to sell. I'm just like, do you think I'm stupid? And I guess people do, because they make the offers to me all the time. And so I declined that, politely declined that trade. But I'm not a believer in Nick Martinez, and I suggest all of you get off the Nick Martinez bandwagon. Now, if you listen to the great Tim McLeod, who's an excellent, excellent player, he'll roster to these guys until they blow up. I try to roster them until I see the blow up coming, and then I get out. Will I miss a great one or two outings? Potentially. But I don't know, is a six-inning, two-run win followed by a five-inning, three-run outing with a no decision, followed by two and a third innings with eight earned runs. I mean, do you want that win plus, you know, average ratios just to get crushed that third time out? I tend to have a tendency to say, I'm going to sell a little short on this guy, get out of the market on Nick Martinez, Anthony DiScalvani, Hector Santiago, you pick your poison. That's how I play. Tim goes the extra mile, tries to squeeze out that one win. Obviously been very, very effective doing that. that's it. We're only going to have one topic tonight. Again, another 35-minute podcast. Again, I hope you guys enjoy these little midweek quickie podcasts where we do topical discussions. I will be in Las Vegas, and I'm actually having dinner with one of our listeners on Monday. So we'll be at the Blue Ribbon Sushi Place at 6:15. I know it's a little early, but 6:15 on next Monday evening. If you're around, want to come to the Blue Ribbon in the Cosmopolitan and have dinner with myself, I think it's Jeff, feel free to do that. I made reservations for three with his lovely wife, and I'm sure we can expand that. Guys, we will see you Sunday evening. I should be back from a great graduation weekend with my daughter, though. Gee, that horrible train accident is going to make it very difficult for my my mother and my son to get up, but I'll have to figure that stuff out later on. So always complexities, but what a horrible, tragic thing with an Amtrak crash. So definitely our thoughts and prayers go out to those family members. Guys, enjoy the rest of the week. Good luck with all your fantasy games. If you want to get a hold of me, at Rich Wilson FSG. I haven't changed it yet. At Rich Wilson FSG. Go visit me on prospect361.com. Oh, by the way, I finally wrote up my Yankees outing where I spent the week with them. Haven't published it yet. And I have my list of May pop-up guys. And they are categorized, and we saw this coming, back on track, and some new names. So I'll just give you a little taste here. We saw this coming. Alex Reyes with the St. Louis Cardinals. Back on track, Mason Williams with the New York Yankees, and new names, Jose De Leon with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Boy, I saw him pitch. Very, very impressive. I don't know why he's still in high A. This is a guy that's going to move as fast as Julio Urias. Not as good as Julio Urias, but not that far behind either. Dodgers are sick, man. So it might be in a better position than any other Major League Baseball team. They've got money. They've got a great Major League team. And they've got young kids in their minor league system that are superstars. We've already seen Jock Peterson come up running away with Rookie of the Year to date. I think Chris Bryant will eventually have something to say about that. They got Corey Seager, who's going to be really good. Julio Urias is really good. And now they got Jose De Leon coming in very, very quickly as well. And they still got some other guys sitting there. So it's a very, very stacked system from top to bottom. Guys, we will see you on Sunday. Be well.